Good evening, and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Just for Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author, Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Tonight we have one of my favorite people in the whole wide world as a very, very special guest, Mr. Jacob Morris, who is doing incredible work to keep legacies alive on the streets of New York City. Welcome to the Gist of Freedom is Faith, Mr. Morris.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm always working hard. Anyway, Jacob, how are things with you? And share with our listeners a topic of tonight's show so that we can get this ball rolling.
Well, I think it has something to do with this Freedom Trail that I proposed for downtown Manhattan.
I got really excited when you initially approached me about this wonderful project and initiative. And why don't you give our listeners a little bit more information about this proposed Freedom Trail in downtown New York City?
I've had the idea for this Freedom Trail for quite a while, actually. You know, it all came about, I guess, because I was studying New York City's role in the Underground Railroad. You know, so in the course of doing that, I found documentation for all of these sites. Well, you know, they were clustered downtown. You know, so when you have a clustering of sites with a related theme, you could have a trail. You could walk from site to site. And I saw it as a uniquely New York City story, you know, in contrast to a United States story or a Philadelphia story or a Boston story. And I felt that the different stories with the common theme, which is abolitionism and the Underground Railroad and the struggle for freedom and blacks and whites working together in the abolitionist movement, was very profound and valuable for us to recover in our collective memory.
I concur. Now, Jacob, you mentioned that there are a number of different landmarks in downtown Manhattan. Can you share with our listeners what some of those particular landmarks are as part of your proposed Freedom Trail?
Sure. When I think what happened was, you know, they had this grant, the U.S. Department of Education, they had like this $2 million grant. And I started as a grant writer, and I wanted to help this friend of mine win this grant. He's a history professor in Brooklyn at Medgar's College, and he also has a very worthy nonprofit that does great work in the community, the Crown Heights Youth Collective. So I wanted to help him, and so I found this program, and I said, hey, let's do this. We could win this. So he said, sure, Jake. I don't think he really believed me, actually, you know, that we could actually win federal money. I don't think he really believed it. But I did, and I committed myself to what New York City's role in the Underground Railroad was. I mean, you know, because basically it was kind of legendary. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't that documented. At that point, there was no question in my mind that this was a major, very important story in New York City's history that people should know about. And most of the money for this program, this federal education program, was going to the Cincinnati Freedom Center Museum. But there was always some money left over, and I wanted that leftover money to come to New York City to tell, you know, our part of the story. I'll move this along.
Thank you.
So So that was like a key moment, you know, when he told me the funding was going to disappear. And I was very, very troubled. So I went to sleep that night, and I woke up in the morning, and I had the idea to name the street where Frederick Douglass landed when he escaped from slavery when he was 20 years old, you know, after him as a way to make New York, make New Yorkers and residents of New York City conscious of the story of New York City's role in the Underground Railroad. Without money, because how do you tell the story without money? So somehow I came up with that idea, and that was my first street naming. And I actually got it approved. That was so that was the first site, was Frederick Douglass Landing.
Mm-hmm.
So then after that, I decided, wow, this is kind of fun. So I'm actually good at this, and and I'm making a lot of people happy, and I'm telling an important story. So,
Jacob, let me sort of share with our listeners that that's primarily what you do is you have streets throughout New York City, and I don't even know if it extends beyond the borders of New York, but I know that you have streets renamed for famous African Americans, correct?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, exacting. It's like being a chef.
Share with our listeners some of the streets that you've had renamed, because I know of at least three or four that you've shared with me, but I want to make sure our listeners know. And this is an important way to keep our legacy and history alive as well.
Like, for example, Matthew Henson lived in Harlem. And Delroy Lindo, they did a really nice movie about Matthew Henson called Glory and Honor. And Delroy Lindo, I was very impressed with this myself. He not only donated the money for a plaque, he designed a beautiful bronze plaque, which got placed on the building at the Dunbar apartment complex. And unfortunately, the plaque got stolen. And basically, and then there was a plaque for Paul Robeson, and that one got stolen. And there was a plaque for James Weldon Johnson, and that one got stolen. So basically, there was a plaque for Sugar Ray Robinson that got stolen. So all these beautiful historic plaques have gotten stolen, but, with a street sign, if it happens to get stolen, which it's a lot harder to do, and they're not worth as much money as a bronze plaque, that they melt down. It's tough. And, the Department of Transportation replaces the sign. Plaques are nice. I like to combine plaques with street signs. I like to, do combined ceremonies. But you have to be careful with bronze because they will get stolen. Some of the names were Abolitionist Place in Brooklyn, which was really cool. I did Sugar Hill Luminaries Park in Sugar Hill in North Harlem. I did the Reverend Pennington, who presided at the wedding of Frederick Douglass. I did that in Queens. Dr. Susan McKinney, who was the third black doctor in America and the first black woman doctor in Brooklyn. I've gotten 29 streets named in Harlem, including boulevards and avenues. I got the street behind the Apollo named after James Brown. All of 145th Street named after A. Philip Randolph. All of Bradhurst named after W.E.B. Du Bois. All of Edgecombe north of 155th after Paul Robeson, and Edgecombe south of 155th after Thurgood Marshall. I got the viaduct over the Harlem Valley named after Charles Hamilton Houston. Billie Holiday, Ella Baker, Madam C.J. Walker, Zora Neale Hurston.
You do a remarkable job in keeping the legacies of these great human beings alive, not only for us as adults to be proud of, but I think it's also very, very important that our children understand the shoulders upon which they stand. What I'd like to do, we're at the halfway point of the show, so let's bring on our first caller. Is that okay, Jacob?
I think that's a great idea.
Let's do it then. First caller,
okay.
Thank you for joining us on the Just the Freedom is Faith. Okay, apparently we have either technical issues or the caller got a little gun-shy at the last moment. But let's continue this conversation. Jacob, what I want to do and make sure that we cover is, number one, people are very excited about your article for the proposed Freedom Trail in Manhattan.
Yeah, it's really gotten a tremendous response, that Wall Street Journal article. It's pretty amazing. I love it. They did a fantastic job. You know, they really brought it to life.
Hi, this is Julie Finch calling in.
Hi.
Of the Gibbons Underground Railroad site on 29th Street.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. I heard from Vern Luskin, my co-chair, that you're on the radio, on Leslie's talk radio. So I'm calling in to congratulate you on the article and to say, I'm asking you, I guess, in a public sense, when will the Reverend Wright House get landmarked, do you think? Well, it took us 4 years to
you
get
know,
the Gibbons Underground Railroad site landmarked.
You know, actually, I mean, the structure is protected because the whole district is landmarked.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. What's the name of the district?
Yeah, the whole district is landmarked, so they can't touch it. I mean, they theoretically they could, I suppose. If it was structurally unsound, but it's not.
Oh, that's great. Well, then when are you going to make the Freedom Trail?
I mean, you know, it wouldn't hurt to, you know, throw an additional layer of protection on it. We could ask for it to be designated as a landmark. As an individual landmark, as on top of it being in the historic district. I wouldn't mind... you know, actually, and probably the community board would be receptive to now, given all this positive feedback that they're getting.
I guess what I want to say is I want it to be documented as an Underground Railroad site. That's what
I want. That documentation exists.
Well, I was lazy and I haven't found it.
Oh, well, you know, do so much.
Right.
But the documentation is there and pretty extensive the Reverend Theodore Wright, owned the house and lived there.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to move the show forward. Thank you, caller. I appreciate you joining the conversation and wrapping up the show. But let's share for our listeners' benefit a little bit more about Frederick Douglass Landing, if you'd be so kind. And I think it's also important, again, for our children to hear a little bit more about this as well.
Well, you know, I love that. You know, he decided that he couldn't exist as a slave anymore, so he decided to leave Baltimore and go north and escape to freedom. He had this wonderful fiancée, Anne Murray, and she actually gave her life savings to him to buy the train and boat tickets. And she sewed a shirt for him that was a sailor shirt, but it was red material. I tell you, I guess the sailors dressed pretty loud in those days. And so he had a sailor, and he knew the sailor lingo because he was a master caulker in the shipyard, so he was very skilled labor and very individually proactive and on the ball. So he made it through this incredible journey on from train to boat to train to boat to train, and he was almost caught twice, you know, in the course of the journey from Baltimore to New York City. And he arrived in New York City, and this incredible wave of emotion came over him when he landed at the dock in Manhattan. And then he ran into another another black who had escaped from Baltimore several months before, who he knew, who warned him about the bounty hunters in Manhattan. So at that point, you know, it wasn't so much fun anymore, and he literally slept in the Five Points District amidst some garbage cans. The next day, he took his heart. He was also incredibly hungry. He was afraid to talk to anybody because, you know, what he was told was anybody could give him up, a black person, white person, you know. So, but he saw a black sailor, and he put his heart and his life in his hands, and he spoke to the guy, and the guy led him to David Ruggles. And physically brought him over to Lisbon Art Street to David Ruggles' boarding house. And Ruggles sheltered him and mentored him. And then this is one of the coolest things about Frederick Douglass, is one of the first things he did was he sent for his fiancée to come up to New York City. And she did come, and they got married in David Ruggles' boarding house, and the wedding was presided over by the Reverend Pennington, who I also got a street named after. And he was a great black abolitionist leader.
Jacob, just for posterity's sake, could you share with us a little bit about who David Ruggles was, if you know anything more about him? Because
Great, mostly unknown figures of the abolitionist movement. He was really critical in the formation of the New York City Vigilance Committee. He was also the publisher of the first black-owned magazine in America, The Mirror of Liberty, which was published on Lisbon Art Street. He was the proprietor of the first black reading room, which was on Lisbon Art Street. And that boarding house that he was the proprietor of, which was the headquarters of the Vigilance Committee from somewhere around 1835 to maybe 1841, when he left for Massachusetts. And then the new leader was the Reverend Theodore Wright. And then the headquarters changed over to that cute little house on the corner of White Street and West Broadway that they have the photographs of in the Wall Street Journal. But Ruggles was very dynamic, a tremendous activist. And you know, I think you could say that he was a major part also of rights for women. And you got to think about the time frame, you know, 1835, 1836. You could say that the women's emancipation movement really grew out of the radical wing of the abolitionist movement. And he was a major player in that more radical wing of the abolitionist movement.
Well, Jacob, sounds like, if nothing else, you know your history, young man, and I'm always impressed when we have conversations of this ilk. It is indeed taking us back down journeys that many of us do not know about it, so I truly thank you for sharing with us. Talk to us a little bit, if you would, and before we get back into the primary topic of discussion, share with us a little bit about Francis Tavern and what you can share with our listeners about that.
Ah, good old Francis Tavern. Well, you know, Samuel Francis, was a really good friend of George Washington. They were good friends. And his tavern was an excellent place to go. So he established his tavern downtown, let me see, somewhere in the mid-1760s, before the Revolutionary War. So he and George Washington become friends, And then the British, well, then the Revolutionary War starts. Okay. So, you know, after the battles by Boston, then, you know, the British decide to invade New York City. But George Washington, you know, while he was fighting them, this is 1775. Now, Sam Francis was from the West Indies. They called him Black Sam. Well, golly gee. He was black. You know, that's really kind of cool. See, oh, well, his daughter's name was Phoebe. She goes down in history as Pretty Phoebe. The legend is, and it's somewhat documented, that she saved George Washington's life by breaking up a plot to poison him from a British spy who had gotten into his bodyguard, and that supposedly she actually knocked this plate of poisoned food out of his hands that this British spy unveiled his plot to her while he was trying to court her. And then during the war itself, during the Revolution, so New York City was occupied by the British, and they frequented Francis Tavern. It was one of the best places to, I guess, eat and drink in New York City. And so they went to Francis Tavern. And there was a lot of intelligence that was passed on, you know, that that Sam Francis was able to glean from them and pass on to George Washington. And the revolutionary forces.
Okay, Jacob, can you clear something up for us now? If I'm not mistaken, there is a sign of an image of a white man hanging on the tavern. And based on your knowledge, was Franz black or was he white?
He's absolutely a black man. Absolutely, indubitably, inscrutably, and undeniably.
So do you know why they have an image of a white man?
Was black. Beats the hell out of me.
we
could look into that.
So let's get back to the proposed Freedom Trail. And now, was there an article written about this Freedom Trail in the journal?
Yeah, man. I mean, they did an amazing job. I'm very impressed with their professionalism and their great video journalists and their graphics people. They really brought this little vision of mine to life. They really, really did. You could really see it, you know. I'm, like, so pleased with them.
Let's do this. Let's talk about the proposed Freedom Trail a little bit. And I appreciate this diversion of history because it's always wonderful to hear these stories. But I want to know, firstly, is it associated with the African burial monument that I believe is on Broadway near Church Street? Is that part one of the...
Well, it's part of the trail. I don't, you know, the nice thing about this is you could start anywhere and end up anywhere with the sites, you know. I mean, because of the clustering, you know, it just depends, I guess, on, you know, where you get off the subway. If you get off near one of the stops or one of the sites on the trail, you could start there. You know, it's not like, oh, you have to start at number one and then you have to go to number two. You know, it's like you just walk around and there's the difference.
Right. Now, how many sites are there that you have proposed for the Freedom Trail?
Right now, we have about 20 sites.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And most people...
I'll tell you, I was knocked out myself as I was doing it. I really was, man. You know, because I had the... First, I came up with my list, and then I transposed the addresses, you know, or the locations on my list to a Google map. You know, you could do that. You know, so I made my own New York City Freedom Trail on a Google map. And it was like when I finished, I was like, I was excited, and I like, you know, printed it out, and I was like waving it around in the living room. Baby, look, look.
listen, I mimic, Jacob, your excitement. What I'd like you to do, though, is share with our listeners some of the more unknown, because I'm amazed that there are actually 20 different landmarks in the same area. So that's news to me. That's newsworthy to me. But share with our listeners some of the more unknown sites that you came across in during this journey.
Well, I like the Sailor's Home. I like Dowling's Oyster House. There's the two first African free school sites. I like an arbitrary site at the intersection of Minetta Lane and 6th Avenue for the Land of the Blacks, which that's another great story, which is, that when they built the wall for Wall Street, they gave the farms to blacks so that they could be the buffer zone between the Indians and the whites. They said, oh, well, we'll give you this farmland. Oh, if the Indians come, they'll kill you first. And they called that farmland the Land of the Blacks. I mean, it was pretty extensive, too. It was like all of Greenwich Village was this black-owned farmland. They couldn't bequeath it to their children. They changed the laws, after this revolt that they had somewhere around 1709 or 1711, something like that. They changed the inheritance laws so that blacks couldn't bequeath property to their children. So the land reverted to white people, and the Indians were less of a problem after that. But, I was always tickled that they did that. So they did something good, but they had a reason. yeah, I love
now,
it.
Okay, so now, a couple of things. I still want to know some of the more unknown sites associated with the proposed Freedom Trail, and then you're going to share with us who is Dr. McEwen.
He was a major figure. He was a radical Quaker, I guess I have to call him. Yeah, he was. And he had a bookstore that was also a major Underground Railroad location. Harriet Tubman would actually stop there. That was on Nassau Street. Let's see. There was a Shiloh Presbyterian Church, which was the first black Presbyterian congregation in North America, 1822. Now, basically under a ramp leading up to the Brooklyn Bridge. Sojourner Truth lived on Canal Street, the eastern part of Canal Street, for like 9 years. That would be a site. What can you say about Sojourner Truth? Great lady. One of the important sites to me is the site where Elizabeth Jennings, a young black woman school teacher, got thrown off a streetcar and dumped onto the cobblestones around, I think it was like 1853. And we know where that was. And she sued. And her lawyer was a young Chester Arthur, who later became president of the United States. And she won. So 100 years before Rosa Parks, Elizabeth Jennings was responsible for desegregating the streetcars in New York City. No, I think that's a great story. So that would be a site on the Freedom Trail. She was, of course, imbued with the abolitionist spirit of equality.
That's fascinating. So, Jacob, a couple of things. Where can our listeners get more information? Because you are such a historian and you're sharing all of these wonderful particles, if you will, of the project. And I want to make sure two things. One, there's a place people can go to get more information about the proposed Freedom Trail here in New York City. And two, I'm sure that you will get a groundswell of support from people who want to contribute in some capacity to moving this project forward. And then I'd like you to wrap up with where is the project right now, and what do you see happening in terms of the timeline to actually bring this to manifestation?
Well, I just got to say that you're a beautiful person, Lee.
I love you too, Jacob. Thank you for the kudos. I can always use them.
I really mean that, man. You know, you're just a beautiful person.
Thank you. I love you too,
and
bro.
I really appreciate, you know, you setting this groundwork forth. Well, let's see. Right now, we have the support of the community board. We have the support of Julie Menon, who's a dynamite lady, and she was the chair of Community Board 1 for 7 years. And she's just recently declared her candidacy for Manhattan Borough President, and we're delighted to have her support for downtown Manhattan having its own Freedom Trail that would compare with Boston's or Philadelphia's, for crying out loud. It's about way over two. And we have, God, as you know, we have our own theme. We have our own special story. Or as this other lady said in an email to me today, she said, this is the other story of freedom. Now, I was very moved by that, you know, because, I mean, people think, you know, that it's all about the Revolutionary War as the struggle for freedom. Well, but the struggle for freedom and within the abolitionist movement and the struggle against slavery, that was a profound struggle, and that makes a great story for New York City, along with some of the early Revolutionary War sites that have, you know, like stuff like the Francis Tavern stuff. That part
right.
of the story people don't even know, as you pointed out. You know, a lot of people think that Samuel Francis was white when he wasn't. So, you know, I mean, you know, that's the kind of stuff. So where are we? Well, we got the support of the Downtown Alliance a couple weeks ago, and that's very, very heartening and critically important, because that's the alliance of, you know, the real estate interests and the business interests in downtown Manhattan. So to have their support is, like, wonderful. And that'll help us to get approvals from the individual property owners for the placement of the historic markers and plaques for the different sites. Because almost none of them exist anymore. You know, just about all of them, I mean, have been demolished at least once or twice. And there's, you know, I mean, you know how downtown Manhattan looks. It's all big buildings.
Right.
You know, so the original sites just ain't there, but the memories are there, so they can be marked.
Right. And so you propose to do that with what, actual markers,
historic markers on the sidewalks, you know,
okay.
that would tell the respective stories, but as part of this common theme of,
correct. Okay.
You know, the New York City Freedom Trail, you know, which would bring out, you know, this struggle for freedom
right.
through the lens of the abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad. And the black part of the story of early colonial Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you know that the African burial ground originally took up 5.5 acres?
No, I didn't.
I mean, it was big. And you know how many people buried in the African burial ground?
I don't think I want to, but for the sake of our listeners, I'll defer to you.
20,000 buried in three layers, man.
Wow.
Three layers of skeletons.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, you know,
it really is.
Yeah. So you have how many landmarks are currently? You mentioned there's about 20. Can you give us a complete number? Is your research ongoing in terms of uncovering?
Well, the research continues, but the 20 is a nice number.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It could wind up being 23. It could wind up being 19. You know, we'll have some of the top historians in the United States will wind up being on our advisory board.
What's your timeline like, Jacob? Number one, number two, how can people get more information about this wonderful project?
I can give my email, which is blackorchidxl@gmail.com. That's blackorchid, the letter X and the letter L, at Gmail. They can email me. We hope to launch a Kickstarter campaign by August. We're moving in that direction as rapidly as we can. But, you know, you want to do that correctly, otherwise it won't be successful. So, you know, I don't want to do it and not be successful. I want us to kick it in the booty and hit a home run. More than hit a home run. I want to win the game and get this thing built. And that'll be a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Is the caller still on the line, the young lady that you were speaking with earlier in during the show?
No kidding.
Are you calling me Julie Finch?
Yes.
Hi. I just wanted a tiny correction. By the way, I've pledged $20 to the Kickstarter campaign. I just wanted to add
as soon as we get it.
Yeah. I wanted to correct or add an additional name. Instead of McThune, who is a wonderful, I think he was a minister or an abolitionist, Isaac Hopper is the one who had the bookstore, and he's the Quaker abolitionist who worked with David Ruggles. I think his bookstore was on Nassau Street.
Fascinating. Well, thank you for sharing that. We do want to be accurate in our depiction and sharing of history, so I appreciate your contributions, both financially and otherwise.
Thank you very much, all of you. Bye.
Yes, we appreciate you. Jacob, how are we going to fund the project? This wonderful lady gave you $20. Make sure that you don't spend it at the tavern and that you spend it on the trail, okay? What I'd like to know is, and you know this because you've been in this business for some time, how are we going to get funds to make sure that we bring this project to life? Are you still in the tavern, Jacob?
It'll be promotional.
Okay, let us stay on point, Jacob, because we want to wrap this up. So
now,
how are we going to fund this project? How can people get more information about this project and contribute if they should so choose, like Julie, our wonderful guest?
Just email
and
me.
What is your timeline like?
Yeah, email me. Like I said, I hope to launch the Kickstarter thing in early August.
Okay,
we'll have 30 days to raise the money. There'll be reward levels, I'm very excited to make this happen. We got a lot of momentum. This Wall Street Journal article went nationwide.
So that's blackorchidxl@gmail.com. If anyone wants more information about the proposed Freedom Trail in downtown New York City. If people want to get more, they get information about the article, is there a link? I'm sure there's probably one on Leslie's.
WSJ, A New Freedom Trail. Yes, that's the name of the story.
Okay.
And it's the number one hit on Google.
They just typed
that into Google, bang.
Wow.
And also, I'm sure that people can get more information on www.blogtalkradio.com.
That's
the Antique E-Show, because I know Leslie always does a wonderful job in creating images and providing more information.
Let's say better than wonderful.
Yes. Okay. Well, we're being humble. That's hard to do, but we're being humble. So, Jacob, just based on your experience, having worked on similar, albeit smaller projects, what is the timeline? How long do you think it could be before we actually have a proposed Freedom Trail in downtown New York City?
Well, first we got to get the money, and then we can design the plaques. And then we get the approvals from the respective property owners. And then we get the approval of the community board for the design, the specific design of the respective plaques. Each individual plaque has to be individually approved by the community board. But they'll vet them. They'll circulate them. I mean, I know the process, and you know, we'll work together on this as partners. And then, and I think then it'll wind up going to some overall design commission that New York City has, Arts and Design for All Public Monuments. So there's a design commission.
Okay, we're sort of running out of time, Jacob. Let me share with our listeners a couple of things. Number one, Black Orchid.
But you got to go through the steps, you know.
Right. Okay. BlackOrchidXL@gmail.com. That's the way to stay in touch with Jacob Morris, who is involved in all of these incredible projects, including the proposed Freedom Trail downtown New York City. Let's give a shout-out to our producer, Leslie Gist Etheridge, and we want to thank all of you for joining us on the Gist of Freedom is Faith. Good night, and God bless.